listening to Composites Weekly, the leading news and information podcast of the composites industry. And now your host, Jonathan Taylor.
All right, welcome back to another episode here at Composites Weekly, the industry's leading podcast show. I'm your host, Jonathan Taylor. This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Spectra Composites. Spectra is one of the leading distributors of reinforcement materials like gun roving, single strand mat, chop strand mat, tapes, infusion mats, milled fibers, carbon fibers, Kevlars, and much, much more. You can find a wide range of materials, including reinforcement materials, fillers, core materials, and so forth, by visiting compositesweekly.com/Spectra. Well, in today's episode, we actually have a returning guest. Well, not so much a returning guest as a returning company to talk to us about one of the specific products we really didn't get a chance to learn more about. Now, a few weeks ago, we had Brian Evans of Globe Composite Solutions on our show to talk about their company, some of the services, the design and tooling services, along with some of the composites that they offer. But we didn't get into one of the specifics or get into much depth as far as one of the specifics, which is their high gravity composites. And we're going to be talking about that today with three individuals that I have on today. I'm very pleased to have Dr. Wayne Powers. He is the VP of Material Research and Development. We also have Dr. Ron Konis. He is the VP of Business Development. And we also have Mr. Bill O'Brien. He is the Director of Research and Development. And between all three of these individuals, probably adds up to about 60 or 70 years of experience with their background. And so I'm really pleased to have them on. We're going to be talking about this high gravity composite, also known as a high gravity compound. Some refer to it as a lead replacement material. And so we're going to be talking about this material, some of the applications for this material as a lead replacement. And I am really pleased to have these gentlemen on today to share their knowledge and share more about this product. Gentlemen, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I probably had that wrong. It's probably more like 70 or 80 years, right?
It's been a while.
Well, I tell you, this is fascinating because a few weeks ago when Brian joined me, we touched on the high gravity composites, and I really wanted to get a little further into it. We didn't have enough time, but let's talk about these high gravity composites. First of all, what are these composites? And specifically, maybe we can get into, I guess, the Brandonite, and we'll start from there.
Well, high-gravity composites, we have developed them and patented them. We have three patents on them. And these products are used primarily as a replacement for lead-based composites and primarily used in the radiation shielding. So we use a variety of high Z-number metals and other materials in a polymer base to create composites that can vary from being very rigid to being very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And use them, as I said, primarily for radiation shielding of one nature or another.
How dense are these compared to lead?
It's going to depend on, because a lot of the lead applications aren't what you would call pure lead.
Okay.
You have pure lead foil that runs around 11.4. Our composites, we can run up as high as about 5.5 grams per cc in our composites. So we're not using a pure heavy Z metal or as a fill. The heavy Z material is formulated within a polymer-type backbone, and it's formulated for specific applications.
Now, when you mention this polymer metal composite, that is the what you call the Brandonite 4210.
That's basically our Brandonite HGC material, which
okay.
is the high gravity composite.
Okay.
The 4210 in this particular case refers to a specific application.
Okay,
I see. A specific backbone.
Okay. And that specific application would be for the radiation shielding?
Yes, radiation shielding. There's a variety of radiation shielding. If you look at our website, you can see some where we have cathode covers for X-ray tubes.
Mm-hmm.
We can also do radiation shielding inside of various types of nuclear medicine devices, CAT, PET scanners, We also can develop flexible, or have developed flexible radiation shielding for use in as the curtains in explosive detection systems.
Okay.
So it can range from very rigid to very flexible.
There is a cost benefit when compared to lead. Can you explain?
Well, our materials have a higher value in use than lead. We don't claim to be less expensive than lead for the base material. But when you consider the improved durability of our product, particularly in applications where there is a baggage, luggage, parcels passing through a curtain, our material can last up to six times longer than a lead a curtain that is made of PVC or rubber that has been loaded with lead particles. So our material has a much higher hardness than lead itself, and is far more durable than a lead-based product. So the overall value and use of our product is higher than a lead-based product. Now that's primarily for applications where there is considerable movement involved of the radiation shielding material.
Right.
In rigid applications where there is no movement, our material is replaces lead, which is quite toxic, and especially in Europe, there's considerable emphasis on eliminating lead from all of applications.
Another major benefit, kind of to add to that, is that as far as disposal goes, these materials that we make here, these our composite materials, are recyclable. Lead materials are not.
So no, yeah.
Something. Mine. So disposal costs for lead are, I'm sure, only going to increase at this point.
Absolutely. So those are factors not directly cost related, but you were talking the indirect cost that you have to think about down the road. You mentioned briefly safety benefits, which I know it's a growing concern here in the States with lead based products. Can you talk about some of the safety benefits of the Brandonite material versus lead?
Well, one of the issues with a lot of these lead based materials is they're not just solid pieces of lead. A lot of times it's a lead powder you're dealing with.
Right.
So as the material is used, as it wears away, you may actually release lead powder. Now that's material that people can very easily breathe in and be exposed to. So if you actually may have been better off if the lead pieces had been completely solid blocks. Now our materials, they're going to be composed of entirely one composite. So you have a homogeneous mixture, essentially. So it's not like a situation with a lot of these lead products where you have particles that are built into another material.
Right.
It's all one composite material. It's going to last longer for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it also will not pose the hazard of having lead dust in it because it's completely lead free. Your material, the composite, is going to be a homogeneous mixture. It's one material at that point. It's not like where you have lead particles infused in another matrix.
Could elaborate on that. Because every time a piece of baggage or luggage passes through an explosive detection system scanner at a major airport, lead particles are deposited on that piece of baggage. The curtains wear out, the typical curtains will wear out within 4 months. The lead has to go somewhere. It goes into the scanner, where then the TSA employees can be exposed to the lead particles, and a portion of it is actually deposited on your suitcase. So people are not really aware of that particular hazard, but it is something that people should be concerned about.
Oh, absolutely. In terms of casting this material, now what's unique about this is it's less expensive than injection molding. What is the process for casting this material?
Well, we manufacture a mixture of the polymer and our high Z number material, and then before that product sets, it can be poured into a mold of almost any shape. If you can imagine it, we can make the mold, so we pour it, and then the mold would be closed, and then it would be cured for various lengths of time depending upon the application. So We can cast it into flat sheets, which can then be slit on our computer-controlled slitting machines, or it could be a solid piece, such as a, as I mentioned, a cathode cover for X-ray tubes.
That gives you a lot of flexibility because we can build molds specific for an application without getting into designing and building very expensive tools that are required in injection molding formulation and also alter dimensions to suit a specific need.
Is it like a two-part application that is mixed, you know, prior to being poured into the mold?
Well, that's correct. What you've got is you have a part that is your high Z material, and you've also got polymer. You're going to make a homogeneous mixture of it, and then at that point you would mold it.
Okay.
Certainly how you mix it is a very important part of the whole process, and the types of mixers that you're using and the shear rate of the mixer, all of that plays a role in the homogeneity of the finished product.
Looks like, I mean, just based on what you've all described, there are plenty of markets out there in terms of this type of product.
We typically market our products to OEMs, to an original equipment manufacturer, who is then selling their product to, they would either sell it to, in the case of explosive detection systems,
okay,
they would sell it to, say, or they would sell it to particular airports. So the end-use customer, and we do work with the end-use customer to, you know, create pull-through for our products. Mm-hmm. But our direct customer would be typically an OEM manufacturer.
Yes.
We don't sell directly to the consumer.
And so there are a number of industries. You mentioned airports, also anything that uses radiation shielding applications. Any other applications that you can lay out for us that this would be a good replacement for?
There are other markets that you could use this product in. They can be used as ballast, for instance, to replace lead in ballast in sailboats, for instance. You could use this product to replace lead in ballistics applications. There are applications of this product that could go into the fishing industry, for instance, to replace lead sinkers, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to focus on what we would consider the higher value applications, where there is a bit more, you know, technology involved in,
right,
in application.
And radiation shielding curtains thing, these would be applications, when you mention airport applications, this would be where, as you mentioned earlier, where, you know, people are sending their luggage through these X-ray machines all the time, and you see those curtains on the machines, and that's what we're talking about specifically.
Yeah, the one that you would typically see at the check-in counter, or where you're checking, you know, where you're,
right,
entering the plane.
Right.
Those are fairly low-speed applications, but the ones that, the screening that takes place for in major airports for explosives, those are pretty high speed, and there's a lot of wear and tear on the curtains, and there's a tremendous need for having a curtain that has not just a lot of flexibility but resilience, so that after it has been displaced by a bag passing through it, it needs to spring back into position, you know, quite quickly in order to maintain radiation shielding, so that workers in the area do not get exposed. So there's a, you know, there's a big, you know, a need for as I said, the resiliency. Also, the abrasion resistance has to be very high, much higher than what you see in the, where, you know, where you're actually boarding the plane or taking your luggage in through the, if you're checking your, you know, your carry-on. So that's a major requirement, is high-speed performance, explosive detection.
And also in the, I guess, in the medical industry, too, in use with CT scans and also the PET scans?
Yes, there's a need. But though there, that's not a, there's no movement of the shielding other than the movement, you know, minor movement involved. So there, the primary reason is to replace lead in the application. When somebody goes into a PET CT scanner, for instance, they've taken a radioactive substance, they've been injected with a radioactive substance, so they are actually emitting radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So as they come out of the scanner, as their head is emerging from the back end of the scanner, they can give off radiation that could impinge upon the sensors and give spurious and false readings and make it more difficult to get a clear image. So that needs to be shielded. The back portion of that the PET scanners need to be shielded.
I really appreciate the time that you all have spent today, just kind of giving us an overview of the high gravity composites. Probably one of the best places people can find out more is by visiting your website at Globe Composite, and that's singular, globecomposite.com, under our composites, looking under the high gravity composites, and people can read more. It's probably the best place to find out more.
Yes. You could also read our patents. There's one patent number that's cited in the on the website, but there's two other patents that have been issued. So we have three patents in total.
Well, gentlemen, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And we'll be definitely posting the link back to Globe Composite, specifically to the page on high gravity composites for people that want to learn more. It just a few days ago had a guest on talking about bio-based composites, and today we're talking about high gravity composites as a replacement for lead. So it's really exciting to see where the technology is going in so many different areas as it relates to composites. And I really appreciate your time educating us today. Thank you for your time. And again, this is Dr. Wayne Powers, Dr. Ron Konis, and Mr. Bill O'Brien. Thank you all for joining me today and sharing your insight.
And Jonathan, we invite you, if you have time at some point, to come visit us.
I would love to.
Just outside of Portland. We'd love to be able to give you a tour and show you our facility and talk about some of the more exciting work that we've been doing here.
I would love to do that. For a company that's been around as long as since 1890, I know you all are doing some great things. And again, thank you for your time. Look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jonathan.
All right, you bet. Have a great week.